An IT problem snarls U.S. airline traffic. A Sudanese airliner lands safely in Libya after a hijacking. And the FAA will investigate the legal standing of a slot auction protest at Newark. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, August 27th, 2008. Computer problems at a flight control center near Atlanta delayed flights nationwide yesterday. FAA spokeswoman Kathleen Bergen said the center had a communication link failure in the network about 1:30 p.m. Eastern. The center is located in suburban Hampton and handles instrument flight plans filed for aircraft departing airports in the eastern U.S. Bergen told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, quote, "As a result, all the flight plans for any instrument flights nationwide are having to be processed through a similar facility in Salt Lake City, so that's slowing things down," unquote. Storms near several large commercial airports, including Atlanta, compounded the problems. The FAA stresses that safety has not been compromised by the glitch. By late yesterday evening, the FAA was reporting all flights from major airports back on schedule. It was not clear, however, whether the Hampton Comlink was back up, so check for updates today at aero-news.net. Very little hard information was available by our deadline for today's AeroCasts, but CNN reported a Sudanese airliner was hijacked shortly after taking off from Niala in the country's war-torn Darfur region yesterday. The airliner was reported to have landed in Kifra, Libya, according to media reports. It was not known how many passengers were on board or what the hijackers had wanted. Two Sudanese flights were commandeered in 2007. In both cases, the hijackers were taken into custody and no passengers were harmed. In at least one of those cases, the hijackers said they wanted to bring international attention to the situation in Darfur, where a violent ethnic and tribal war has raged for over 5 years between Sudanese officials and a number of rebel groups. Follow the updates on this one at aero-news.net. The U.S. Department of Transportation wants to begin landing slot auctions at the major New York metro airports, starting with a test auction of two slots at Newark Liberty International 1 week from today. The airlines are fighting the idea, and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey says it will not allow planes landing during auctioned slots to come to a gate. The DOT's September 3rd auction involves two landing slots at Newark, previously allocated to EOS Airlines, which went bankrupt earlier this year. That auction was intended to determine the potential value of the slots, but now it looks to be an important test of the Port Authority's legal right to deny gate access. Yesterday, the FAA initiated an administrative proceeding known as a Notice of Investigation to determine whether the port would be in violation of federal regulations if it makes good on its threat. Under law, airports receiving federal grants are required to provide airlines with reasonable and non-discriminatory access to their facilities. The FAA will evaluate whether the port's threatened ban is unlawfully interfering with the airline's ability to access takeoff and landing slots at the airports by discouraging bidders from participating in slot auctions. If the FAA decides the answer is yes, the Port Authority could find itself no longer eligible for FAA grants or payments under existing grants until the matter is resolved. The FAA could also issue an immediate cease and desist order requiring the Port Authority to grant access to the airports. The three New York metro airports received a total of $27 million in grants from the FAA's Airport Improvement Program during fiscal year 2008. American Express Business Travel published data Monday for North American-based domestic and international airfares from its Business Travel Monitor, and for the second quarter of 2008, the monitor confirmed that high fuel prices, which led many airlines to make capacity reductions and tighten ticketing restrictions, increased the average airfare paid. Businesses, in turn, are adjusting. American Express VP Hervé Sedky noted, quote, "We are helping our clients adjust to manage their travel programs in a disciplined way by incorporating best practices and optimizing policy guidelines and compliance strategies. These efforts are designed to maximize spending efficiency and increase the return on investment," unquote. American Express says the second quarter of 2008 marked a 7-year high in the average airfare paid by business travelers, up 10% year over year. The average one-way airfare paid was $260. That's up $24 from the same period last year. Compared to the first quarter of 2008, the fare was up $27, an increase of 12%. Aside from more aggressive price shopping, Sedke says businesses are trying harder to take advantage of discount tickets and advance purchases. Quote, looking at the first 6 months of 2008, the companies that had travelers purchase 8 to 14 days in advance, rather than 0 to 7 days in advance, saved an average of $49 per segment, unquote. Up next on ANN, a crashed Spanish airliner may have been behind the power curve. Southwest Airlines backs off on an aggressive plan for capacity expansion. And are you ready for a small airliner from Kawasaki? You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 27th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Investigators looking into last week's crash of a Spanair MD-82 on takeoff from Madrid's Barajas International Airport are finding clues that a problem usually associated with general aviation accidents may be to blame. Immediately after the crash, investigators focused on witness reports of fire coming from the left engine. It now appears those reports may have been inaccurate. Yesterday, the head of the Spanish commission tasked with investigating the crash described an aircraft struggling to fly behind the power curve, a departure stall. Francisco Soto, Secretary of Spain's Civil Aviation Commission for Investigating Civil Aviation Accidents and Incidents, said, quote, the marks on the ground tell us that the plane hit the ground tail first, and as a result, the tail cone, the end part of the plane, broke off, unquote. Beatriz Reyes Ojeda, one of only 18 survivors, told reporters she thought the plane was moving too slowly down the runway. Quote, I guess I did realize that when the plane was going to take off, perhaps it was not going so fast, unquote. Ms. Reyes Ojeda was released from a hospital following treatment for a gash on one leg. After the initial impact, the airliner skidded and bounced along the ground for nearly a mile. As ANN reported, 153 of the 172 people on board died in that accident. So, with all the redundant systems and crew available on an airliner, how could such a basic error happen? The investigation continues. Southwest Airlines, which has talked recently of a 4% expansion in capacity this year, now says a slumping economy and expectation of falling demand this winter has prompted a decision to cut its winter schedule. Southwest tells the Dallas Morning News it will drop 196 flights system-wide and add only 6 for a net reduction of 5 to 6% of its daily schedule. Spokeswoman Brandy King said the reductions reflect economic concerns and will make more aircraft available to work around winter storms. Some of the dropped flights may return in March, but she added, quote, that being said, we have mentioned that we will be taking steps in 2009 to adjust our capacity growth rate in response to a slowing U.S. economy and added fuel cost pressures, unquote. The changes will affect Chicago the most. Midway Airport will lose a net of 22 departures to 20 cities. What about Southwest's plans to aggressively add capacity next year? CEO Gary Kelly suggested to investors July 24th those plans may be on hold. Quote, right now, we're not real bullish about adding flights at all versus where we are operating today, unquote. If the brand name Kawasaki makes you think of motorcycles and recreational vehicles, start thinking bigger. The Montreal Gazette reports Bombardier's upcoming C-Series airliner, which is slated to enter service in 2013 and offer between 110 and 149 seats, may be about to get some competition from Kawasaki Heavy Industries in the form of a small airliner called YPX. Like the C-Series, the YPX would compete in a segment largely abandoned by Boeing and Airbus. The most recent 110-seat airliner made was Boeing's 717. That was essentially an updated MD-80. Boeing stopped making that plane in 2005. The YPX would feature mostly composite construction, be able to fly 2,300 nautical miles, and boast a lower takeoff weight than the aluminum-bodied C-Series. Larger variants of the Kawasaki and Bombardier planes would also compete against smaller configurations of the popular Boeing 737 and Airbus A320. If you still can't wrap your mind around a Kawasaki airliner, it's not as much of a stretch as it may sound. The company already builds fuselage components for the Boeing 787 and other aircraft components. The company could speed development and cut its costs on the YPX by using components developed for other customers and through collaboration with Mitsubishi and Fuji. Kawasaki has been shopping drawings of the YPX to several airlines and reports interest, especially if the plane turns out to be powered by the Pratt & Whitney PW1000G geared turbofan engine. That engine promises to reduce fuel burn and carbon emissions by double-digit percentages compared to current technology, and it's already been selected by Bombardier and Mitsubishi for their jet programs. The clock is ticking down to the end of Boeing's contract with the International Association of Machinists. The union has decided to strike against Boeing three times in the last 20 years. How likely a strike is this time around depends on who you talk to. Reuters quotes union officials as calling Boeing's latest contract offer insulting and the negotiations tense. The company is offering a pay increase of 2.5% the first year and 2% in each of the following 2 years. Instead of continuing to offer its traditional pension plan, Boeing wants to switch new hires to a defined retirement benefit plan. Union spokeswoman Connie Kelleher says the IAM made a counterproposal on Saturday, calling for a substantial increase to pension and health care benefits. Quote, "The company needs to get serious and offer a proposal that gives our members the improvements that they deserve," unquote. Industry observers predict a crippling strike next week, but Boeing's Tim Healy suggests those observers have been paying too much attention to the union's rhetoric. Quote, "Discussions have been good. We still remain optimistic that we can give a final offer by the Labor Day weekend," unquote. Boeing is expected to make a best and final offer Monday, with a union ratification vote a week from today. Much is at stake. A halt in new aircraft deliveries would cost the company about $3 billion a month in revenue. Still ahead, the Phoenix Mars lander keeps on ticking. At least one U.S. airport is seeing record passenger traffic, and Embry-Riddle makes it 9 years in a row. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, August 27, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. NASA's Phoenix Mars lander has reached the end of its official mission, but is still going strong. The agency has extended the mission through the end of September, as the craft continues digging in the soil of the Martian polar region for chemistry that could support life on the red planet. Unlike the Martian rovers Spirit and Opportunity, which kept running for years longer than their 90-day missions, Phoenix has hardware which can only be used once. There are only four test cells in the Microscopy, Electrochemistry, and Conductivity Analyzer, or MECA, which can analyze soil. Two of them have been used, two remain available. Michael Hecht, the lead scientist for MECA at the Jet Propulsion Lab, says, quote, "In the first two cells, we analyzed samples from the surface and the ice interface, and the results look similar. Our objective for cell three is to use it as an exploratory cell to look at something that might be different," unquote. The next sample will come from a trench called Stone Soup, which is about three times deeper than any previous trench NASA's Phoenix Mars lander has dug. Mission scientists say the deeper trench may concentrate different kinds of materials from what was found in Phoenix's previous digs. The news has been filled lately with headlines about hard times at airlines and budget deficits at airports, but there are always exceptions. Ohio's Akron-Canton Airport tells ANN it saw a record 149,757 passengers in the month of July, crushing the old record set in July 2005 by 5,541. The number was also 20,000 more than in July last year, a 15.4% increase. Year-to-date stands at more than 837,000 travelers through the airport. That's up from 802,000 last year, an increase of 4.3%. Christy Van Auken, Director of Marketing and Communications, has an explanation. Quote, "We are committed to offering what customers want most, low fares and an exceptional customer experience in a sparkling clean facility. We are thrilled that Northeast Ohio travelers are finding CAK a better way to go," unquote. Helping add to the total, Frontier Airlines is up 51.9% over last year at the airport, and U.S. Airways Express grew 47%. AirTran, Northwest Airlink, and United Express also posted double-digit percentage gains. Akron-Canton Airport kicked off CAK 2018. That's the name for its 10-year, $110 million capital improvement program back in March of this year. Projects include a 600-foot runway extension to allow full-size jets to take off with enough fuel to reach the West Coast, the Caribbean, and Mexico. For the ninth year in a row, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University has earned the top ranking in the annual America's Best Colleges Guide, published by U.S. News & World Report magazine. In its specialty category, Best Aerospace, Aeronautical, Astronautical Engineering Programs at Schools Whose Highest Degree is a Bachelor's or Master's, Embry-Riddle's Daytona Beach campus has been number one every year since the category was introduced in 2001. The school's Prescott, Arizona campus has been number three in that category since 2004. The U.S. Air Force Academy took second place this year, the U.S. Naval Academy fourth, and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo fifth. Embry-Riddle has announced plans to offer two Ph.D. programs in 2009, pending accreditation by the Commission on Colleges of the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. The university will offer the first Ph.D. in aviation in the United States through the combined efforts of the Colleges of Aviation at Daytona Beach and Prescott and the Worldwide Campus beginning in May. The Ph.D. in aviation is primarily an online program with one-week residencies each year. An August 2009 debut is planned for a traditional Ph.D. program in engineering physics at the Daytona Beach campus, with special emphasis on space physics, upper atmospheric physics, remote sensing, spacecraft instrumentation, spacecraft systems engineering, and control of aerospace systems. Embry-Riddle is accepting applications for the first class for the Ph.D. in aviation now through January 15th. And finally, perhaps encouraged by the recent progress of a group of orphan T-Alert engine owners, customers who took delivery of the Atom Aircraft A500 centerline piston twin just before the company went bankrupt are forming an owners group. A500 owner Mike Hackett told the Denver Post his $1.25 million plane now sits on an airport ramp near Napa, California, grounded for lack of manufacturer support. Hackett observes that some components have life limits as low as 60 flight hours, and only the manufacturer can replace them. Unlike T-Alert customers who are trying to work with a company in receivership, Atom Aircraft has disappeared completely. A company funded by Russian investors bought the assets, but says it has no interest in reviving the A500, concentrating instead on certification of its very light jet spinoff, the A700. The Atom Owners Group has one other problem. There are only five members. In addition to Hackett's plane, A500s were delivered to owners in Colorado and California. The New Mexico State Police got the last A500 delivery before Atom folded. So can we learn anything here? Well, the lesson for me is, between the advances in composites, the debut of light jets, and the new light sport category, there are way more new companies out there than the market can sustain. If I'm going to buy one of the first five of anything from a brand new company with an unusual design, I'm going to buy it with money I can afford to lose. And frankly, right now, I'm a little short in that category. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Kate Hannai of FlyersRights.org shares tales of woe from airline passengers over the summer and tells us why the U.S. presidential election may determine whether an airline passenger's Bill of Rights is passed next year. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website. www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.